Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Wilmington Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, good afternoon. It's Anne Rafael Petcher, your host for Wilmington Business Radio. We have a great day outside today. What a gorgeous day. Is this not gorgeous?
Gorgeous.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have the two of you both in the studio with me today. We have today Vanessa Martinin with American Mark Tour. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have William Norton Mason. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you very much.
It's so great to have you here. Bill is an attorney at law here in Wilmington. He has a really interesting background I hope he gets into just a little bit. But what he really specializes in is the estate planning and estate and trust administration, and then also resolution of disputes involving estates and trusts. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yes, I think that's fair.
Okay, great. Why don't you tell us a little bit, Bill, about your practice?
My practice, as you said, focuses on estate planning and wills, trusts, helping trustees that are managing trusts manage them in accordance with law.
A lot of people out in the listening audience, they don't do a lot with lawyers all the time. So tell us a little bit about what trustees are and what trusts are.
Well, trustees first are managers of trusts, and they have a fiduciary duty to the beneficiaries of the trust to manage the trust properly and in accordance with law and in the best interest of the beneficiaries. And if they don't do that, they potentially suffer being sued for a breach of trust.
So these are often just family members. They're not always necessarily professional trust managers.
They are. Indeed, they are from time to time, and it seems increasingly more so. You do have institutional trustees, but there are a lot of individual trustees out there that actually need some guidance. So they don't subject themselves to litigation.
Okay. So you work with all sorts of kinds of people on estate planning, is that right?
Absolutely.
You don't have to be Bill Gates to need an estate planning.
No.
So this is really anybody. At what stage in people's lives do they start thinking about estate planning, and what stage should they start thinking about estate planning?
Many people start to think about that when they have children.
Ah.
They begin to think about if something happened to them, who would take care of their children,
mm-hmm.
who would manage the assets that would produce the income to take care of their children. So I find that often my clients are young couples, but that's not always the case. Some of the people are older people. Some of the people are people who have perhaps estate planning documents but want to make changes and update them.
I see. What kinds of estate planning documents are most important for people to think about?
We recommend that our clients consider a will first, which is very important, a durable power of attorney, a health care power of attorney, and also a living will.
I think probably most people know what a will is.
Right.
In fact, they probably go online and say, I'll just fill out one of these online forms and I'll be done with my will. Is that sufficient?
I've spent a considerable amount of time cleaning up problems that were created by people taking documents offline.
So no is the answer.
I do not recommend that.
Uh-huh. And why? I mean, is that just because it's in some ways you need someone professional to talk through the options with you?
I believe so, yes.
Mm-hmm. So we know what that is, and of course that can include, as you mentioned, a trust, especially for minors, and identifying things like the guardians for the minors and who will be the trustees. And you and I have been talking before this about when you think about trustees, that there can sometimes be more than one person, especially when children are involved, who are trustees.
Right. Well, a couple, when they do their estate planning and they have minor children, should think about who the trustee to manage the assets that produce income for the children if, unfortunately, both parents die. It should be someone who, they don't have to have an MBA or anything, but it has to be someone who can manage money. The guardian of the person of the children may be the same person, but it may not be. It may be somebody that's more suited to actually having the children in their home and care for them. Could be the same person, but it certainly doesn't have to be.
Okay. Now, let's move on to the other documents. You talked about power of attorney. until someone gets to the point where they've actually run into needing a power of attorney for something, they don't know what it is or why they should have one. What is a durable power of attorney?
A general durable power of attorney gives the attorney in fact, who is appointed by the maker, the right to do pretty much anything that person could do for themselves.
Oh.
The durable part of it means that it survives a person's incapacity. If you don't have a durable power of attorney and a person becomes incompetent and their affairs need to be managed, they have to go through an incompetency proceeding, which mm-hmm. is unpleasant and it can be costly. It's a trial. And if you have a durable power of attorney, you avoid all of that.
I see. That's interesting. Okay, that you also talked about a healthcare power of attorney.
Yes, a healthcare power of attorney appoints a healthcare agent who is authorized to make medical decisions for a person when that person's physician decides that they're unable to do so themselves. So it's very important.
That's probably really important for people to think about, not just as they age. I mean, you could have a car accident.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody really should have a healthcare power of attorney. They're ever more important with the HIPAA regulations.
Okay.
Quite often, physicians won't talk to a family member if they don't have a power of attorney, a healthcare power of attorney. So it's a very important document.
Can you, when you are of sound mind, can you give a healthcare power of attorney to anyone? Does it have to be a family member?
It does not. It
could
be anyone.
And so you're going to have conversations with that person ahead of time, I would assume.
Hopefully.
About things like, we've had this conversation with my mother about a DNR
right.
for her. Again, a DNR would be what? How would you explain that?
Do not resuscitate. And that leads into the living will. The living will is a statement of a desire for a natural death. Oh. In essence, it says, the person says that they do not want extraordinary means used to keep them alive if it is apparent that death is imminent, or if they're in a constant vegetative state.
So there, I assume when you fill out these living wills, there you just have a whole bunch of questions you're used to asking.
Well, the people have a lot of questions they want to ask themselves.
Uh-huh.
And there are also longer health care directives that go through a myriad of things, whether you want to have pain medicine, whether you want to have a feeding tube, whether you want to have artificial hydration. And some people really need to think about those things before they execute the documents. I've actually had people execute all of the documents except for the living will and take them home because they wanted to think about it and then come back in and after they've made their choices, execute the documents.
Are they different from state to state?
They can be, yes. Our living will and healthcare power of attorney is basically blessed by North Carolina statute, but I think they're effective anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen them drawn in other states, and they're all essentially the same.
Interesting. So, really, people are moving to Wilmington. A lot of people move to Wilmington all the time, especially
right.
as they begin to age, which is probably a good inflection point for them to think about, maybe I should revisit this.
Well, quite often I do get people that have just moved here that set up an appointment and ask me to review their estate planning documents to see if they comply with North Carolina law. And generally they do, but sometimes we found some things that we would suggest be modified so that if they didn't, in fact, pass away in North Carolina, administration of their estate would be more efficient or easier.
Oh, I see. Well, that actually leads me to my next question, which is everything we've talked about seems to be sort of an upfront planning situation. You obviously also administer, and that's probably where it gets a little bit more complicated.
It can.
There's a big smile on his face right now.
I have said,
I think he's thinking of some stories here.
I have said that where people show the best of themselves and the worst of themselves are either in divorce cases or in estate cases.
Mm.
As you might imagine, there can be disagreements that arise between heirs.
Okay.
There can be heirs that challenge the way the executor or personal representative is administering the estate. And that is why it is very important for people to be as specific as possible in a will. and also to have the appropriate estate planning documents, because it's really one of the kindest things people can do for the people they leave behind. Because the more specific it is, the easier it is for either an executor or a trustee to perform their tasks and they not be challenged.
So the more time they spend up front in the planning process when they're writing and putting together all these different documents, especially the will perhaps, the easier it is on the other end of the spectrum.
Definitely, definitely. And one thing that I should add about a living will is a statement of a desire. And if you have a health care agent and perhaps you have several adult children and a parent is in a bad way and there are questions about what medical procedures or whatever should be, what support should be continued, and there are disagreements, the living will gives the health care agent cover, if you will. They can turn to the other people that are interested, be they siblings, and say, look, this is what mom and dad or dad wanted.
And that's essentially the executor.
That would be, the executor comes in when a person has died and you have an estate.
Okay.
This would be the health care agent appointed in the health care power of attorney.
Okay. Is it often the same person?
It could be. Doesn't have to be, though.
Probably whomever is closer, actually, physically, I would assume.
Quite often people will choose someone that is closer, lives in the area, that would be close by and easy to contact with the physicians. And also, I always recommend that my clients, after they do their health care powers of attorney, they take them to their physicians and have them scan them into their permanent record.
That's interesting. So that can be part of your EHR now, your electronic health record.
Absolutely.
Oh, I had no idea. But that's pretty cool. Is that something new that's part of the Affordable Care Act, or has that been around for a while?
I think it's technology driven going to medical records. We used to have a paper copy when they had paper medical files. Now, of course, everybody's going to imaging, so they just scan it in. Likewise, when people go into the hospital, when they're admitted, I recommend that they take the health care power of attorney or a copy and let the hospital scan it into their permanent record at the hospital.
That's great. So the digital copies are legal in a court of law then?
Well, yeah, they are. It's a question.
It's a dumb question, isn't it?
No, it's really a question of what will the medical provider recognize as authorization to talk to the healthcare agent. Because of the HIPAA regulations, they are increasingly ever careful about whom they talk to about an individual's medical condition and what treatment they should have. So the doctors want to see and know that there's a health care power of attorney or a HIPAA release. There's a HIPAA release, which is a different type of document.
I see. Interesting. So is that something, if you were going into a nursing home or assisted living facility, would you also take those documents with
definitely,
you there?
Definitely.
Interesting. What about the hard copy of the wills?
In our firm, we have our clients execute two duplicate originals, and our client takes an original will with them and puts it with their valuable papers, and we keep one in their file because there are times when a family member will come in and say that another family member died, and they know that we did a will for them, but they can't find the original, and they need the original for probate, or at least it's easier to probate with an original. And we say, you know, not to worry. We have a duplicate original that we can offer for probate, and it expedites matters.
For those of us who didn't go to law school, what is probate?
Probate is the act of offering the will for probate and it being essentially approved by the clerk of court and the estate opened.
Do you literally go to court to make this happen, or
there's an estate's office at the clerk of court's office, and probate encompasses more than that really, but that is the beginning of the will is offered for probate, it's accepted, and then the administration of the estate begins.
I see. And if someone disagrees with something that's in the will, is there a...
If there are what are called will caveat cases.
Okay.
Someone can bring an action in superior court in which they allege either the person wasn't competent when they executed the will, or mm-hmm. perhaps they were subject to undue influence. And the case goes forward, you have a jury trial, and the will is either upheld or it is not.
It makes me wonder if there isn't some sort of special sauce that you guys understand better than we do that helps people figure out how to talk to their families and the important people in their lives when they are planning their will and creating these documents.
Well, I don't know about that, but we tell them definitely to speak to their family members, let them know that they have a will. As you can imagine, there are people that come in and want wills prepared that, and they have very strong feelings about how they want their property to be disposed of upon their death. And there are situations where they don't want to leave property to someone that you might expect they would.
Mm-hmm.
And we are very careful to be sure, and generally it's not even a question, that the person is competent to make a will and that we don't think that they're under any kind of undue influence. Because if there's a caveat proceeding, one of the witnesses is going to be the lawyer that prepared the will and witnessed its execution.
Boy, how do you do that? If you're concerned, someone walks into your office and you feel either that they're really not competent to write this will and to make these statements, what do you have to do?
I won't prepare it.
I see.
And I sometimes if it's a really elderly person, mm-hmm. I will converse with them and ask certain questions and just general conversation. And lots of time they don't even know it's happening, but I satisfy myself that they're competent and I actually make notes in my file. We don't want to be called as a witness, but
right.
if we are, we certainly want to, and we write a lot of wills. So perhaps you don't remember each and every one clearly, but I make copious notes if there is any question, or I think that there is anyone who questions the maker's competency, because I want to be able to go back and look at those notes and be able to testify that they were competent. They mm-hmm. knew what they had. They knew who they wanted to give it to. They obviously were oriented times three. They knew who they were, where they were, what time it was, all that kind of thing. But that is rare. Most of the people are obviously competent.
Right, right. Well, boy, it sounds to me like what we have here is a plea to people to address this issue earlier in your life and not wait.
It is wise. It can solve a lot of problems on the back end, let me put it that way.
Okay. Well, if you're out there listening and you need to have your will checked on, or you don't have one, or you want to get on that durable power of attorney or healthcare power of attorney, how would someone get a hold of you, Bill?
Well, our office is at 228 North Front Street, Suite 201. Our telephone number is 910-763-0403, and that's really the best way to contact
us. Okay, great. And we'll have something on the website about that, too. So now I'm just going to move over here for a minute. We're going to talk about something completely different. And we'll come back to Bill in a minute here. Vanessa.
Hello.
So glad to have you here today. Tell me about American Marketeur. What are you? What is your company, I guess, is what I really want to know.
American Marketeur is a full-service marketing firm. It's independent. We do not take markups on media buys, so we can provide completely unbiased advice. We focus on building 12-month marketing plans for businesses with under 500 employees. And there are 30 million of them in the United States, so we have our work cut out for us. But
wow, so you focus on a particular size of a company as opposed to a vertical market industry.
Absolutely. The process that I've developed after 26 years of marketing throughout the United States and in Hong Kong and South Korea, I found that small businesses can act the same as Fortune 100 businesses, and we can use those best practices at any scale through any type of business, so that it can be a medical practice or an entertainment venue or a nonprofit. It doesn't matter what type of business you are. Mm-hmm. You can apply the right principles to plan your marketing effectively and track its success, because return on investment is the most important thing. Marketing's sole purpose is to positively impact your revenue or profitability.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. Long-held belief on our side here, too, at A. Revell. I can tell you there are so many things to do today to market your company. Where do you see people wanting to go the most?
Oh, I love this. Well, you know, of course, everyone's jumping on the social media bandwagon because there are so many social media outlets, and that's completely valid and a great way to engage your potential audience if it makes sense for your business.
Right.
I love the story of the engineering firm that I did work for. They had a Facebook task force that met for 3 hours every Friday afternoon.
Wow.
Which is, you know, a great
Facebook?
Deal of, yeah, they were focused on Facebook.
What kind of engineering was this?
Well, it's a variety of engineering services and multi-office, but
interesting
firm throughout the southeastern Carolinas. Well, you know, when we looked at their most profitable service line, and we looked at who actually made the decision on that service line, we found that those folks may be on Facebook, but begrudgingly, just to see their grandkids once in a while.
Sure.
They didn't want to know the engineering firm out there, and,
right.
and they didn't want to engage with you there. So we looked further into attributes about their ideal audience, and we found that, well, you know, there's some consistency in where they went to school, so we invested in made some alumni investments into alumni newsletters and organizations and events, and also got them published into certain publications and
key vertical trade publications.
Yes,
I would assume,
exactly. And we focused on where they were going to see the best return, and that paid right. off exponentially. And it was a lot actually more economical.
Mm-hmm.
So we got them off that bandwagon, and that's really what I try to tell people. Just because it seems new and cool, you have to look at where your audience is and if they want to engage with you there.
I would assume that, you know, as we all learned in Marketing 101, you spend a fair amount of time doing audience analysis with your clients.
Absolutely.
What kinds of questions do you ask them to find out about how much they know about their audience?
Well, I find that we have to usually start from scratch, where we're looking at your current database and actually calling your clients, asking them some questions.
And this is even if they've had other marketing firms.
Absolutely.
In place before.
And, you know, in that case, we're auditing their current marketing to see if they're getting the return. That is the key here. So you have to know as much as you can about your ideal client, customer, patient, your audience in general. What drives them? What are their priorities? How do they speak? Are they visual folks? Are they auditory? Are they kinesthetic? Do they want to, you know, touch and feel you? Do they want to be dazzled by visual effects? Do they want to have the long, lengthy descriptions? What age group? Of course, that's an obvious one, but it's more about focusing on what motivates and what priorities are in these folks' lives, because that's how you can engage. Engaging folks is key today, and
right.
you can't do that if you don't know.
Right. I think we've all learned how to turn off the yelling person in the background.
Mm-hmm.
All those radio shows that have people going, Sunday, Sunday. We cannot even hear them anymore.
Right. We're not engaging with those folks at all, right? We're just turning that off.
Yeah. So how do people find you? I mean, how literally do you market yourself? Are you a marketeur of marketeur?
Well, I'm getting better. You know, it's the cobbler's shoes. Us mm-hmm. marketeurs are usually terrible at marketing our own services, because just like everyone else, I went into business 10 years ago on my own, and have grown that through referrals. I have a huge referral network throughout the country. In fact, that's another thing that's different about American Marketeur versus your typical marketing firms. We have a huge network of designers and programmers and experts throughout the country that we can match with the client.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Take a step back for a second. Mm-hmm. Talk about that. So you have partners that you work with just wherever they live. They mostly work from home. And
absolutely. Most they're all independent.
Okay.
So that we can do work for anyone anywhere in the country, but what's most important is not having one resource that has to put on a different hat for each client. What I do is look at the client's needs and then find the right resource for them. Okay. And that's a little different take on things.
That's kind of like what Bill does with his clients who come in with getting
ready
to do
a will. I heard
that
about the planning. You know, it's planning up front. It's doing all the research up front so that you can make a plan. That's the only way you can see if something's working. So you set benchmarks for yourself throughout the year so you can find out if this is working or if that's not working. And if I'm doing my job, you know, if my team is doing their job correctly, then it's going to work.
So do you normally spend maybe the first month or so of your engagement just creating a plan?
Absolutely. Well, and that is our engagement. This is where we focus. It takes 30 to 60 days to build a plan.
Right.
And we try to work with companies primarily who can't afford a full-time marketing person.
Right.
Or a typical firm, so that I do all the upfront work. I help them identify their brand message, identify their database and how to integrate it, their online presence. We look at that. We could set up their online presence so it's got continuity. We set up staff training in some cases. And then we let them go to work. Mm-hmm. We give them exactly a timeline, a task list. Let's say, for example, a social media calendar would tell them to update whatever outlet we've identified, and here's a library of topics to pull from so that they can do it themselves. And in some cases, they ask us to help, and we do engage clients. But my goal is to do several plans every month.
Oh, that's a good idea. So how did the people who are internal then, who are trying to execute your plan, how do they interface with you after you've completed the plan?
Well, we're always there. We love marketing. I love the good, the bad, the ugly marketing. It's fun, and it's what makes or breaks your business.
Right.
You know, it's so we are always there to support our clients as far as questions mm-hmm. and things like that, because we want them to be successful.
Yeah.
And we are actually working on developing ways to do that on a regular basis, where they can actually communicate with us very, very easily and integrate their plan into their scheduling and things like that, because we find that's the next step. They've got the plan, but now they actually need to make sure it happens.
Right. Right. So how long have you been in Wilmington?
I moved here in 1999 from the San Francisco Bay Area.
Holy smoke, mm-hmm. you've been here a long time.
I have.
You're an old, almost, you've been around doing this almost as long as Bill has.
I have. Well, I started doing this in 1988, so I did a lot of traveling and
yeah.
had a great time and learned a lot from successes and failures. You know, I've seen some folks like The Gap and JCPenney and having some rough goes with their branding efforts mm-hmm. and, you know, but also it was part of some of the great successes back in the day with IBM and folks like that. So it's been exciting.
Yeah. How would you define your unique selling proposition?
Well, we are, what we do is we want to see you succeed, so that, you know, a big part of what we do is taking away that markup on what you buy in whatever media outlet. We're going to make recommendations based on what you need.
Okay.
We have no self-interest there.
So it may be ad buying, or it may be media relations, or it may be social media, or it may be any number of different things.
It all depends on what you've told me you want to focus on. Where's your most profitable products and services, mm-hmm. and who are the audience for that? And then we build the plan around that. And I give you a budget based on, you know, what your goals are and what your gross revenue goals are, that sort of thing.
Super. If there's so you said under 500 employees,
mm-hmm.
so your basic U.S. Department of Small Business Administration
right.
definition of small business, do you work with startups too?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm working on a very interesting one right now, but that's very fun because I can get you right in the beginning
right,
when you're
exactly.
starting before you wasted some money or you know, taking some incorrect steps. I love to get businesses when they're just starting out so that you can have a cohesive plan of you know, who you're trying to reach.
Right.
You don't want to throw a wide net out there. You don't want to just throw darts blindly. You know, there's a science to this. This
right.
is there's a process, and if done correctly, you will realize your goals.
Yeah. As we say about Business Radio X, we're not about, you know, the whales looking for plankton here. We're targeting and really helping people develop the relationships. It sounds very similar to what you're doing too. if people are interested in having a new plan for marketing and taking another look, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, I think the best thing to do is to go to the website, which is AmericanMarketeur.com.
Please spell that.
I will. It's American, of course, M-A-R-K-E-T-E-U-R. It's supposed to be a take on entrepreneur and marketing. So.
Very good. AmericanMarketeur.com. Mm-hmm. And if you want help, you can give Bill a call. He gave you his contact information before. We will have all this information on the website. And until next time, this is Ann Revelle Petcher from Wilmington Business Radio.